Welcome to Unruly's official podcast, a series dedicated to unpicking key topics affecting the digital advertising and media industry. Find us at unruly.co.
Hello there, and welcome to Unruly's first ever U7 Client Council podcast. I'm Nikki Spooner, I'm the Global VP of Strategy here at Unruly, and it's my absolute pleasure to welcome Steve Pollock, Head of Media Communications for Nestlé UK and Ireland. Welcome, Steve.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about the importance of sustainable media and media as a force for good. With COP26 having just concluded, we wanted to continue the conversation by considering what we in the advertising industry could do to support the efforts there. The energy used in our digital consumption collectively emits the equivalent amount of carbon as the entire airline industry, and these emissions are expected to double by 2025. So watching online videos accounts for the biggest chunk of the world's internet traffic, 60%, and it generates 300 million tonnes of carbon dioxide a year, which is roughly 1% of global emissions, according to French think tank The Shift Project. This is because, as well as the power used by devices, energy is consumed by the servers and the networks that distribute the content and the advertising. There needs to be a change within the digital advertising industry to ensure that carbon emissions can be reduced. We can't just sit back and wait for the internet to become net zero. It's today's emissions that cause tomorrow's climate change, and we all need to take full responsibility for our digital carbon footprint in media planning today. And I know that this is a cause that is particularly dear to your heart, Steve. So I'm interested to hear what advice you can give our listeners today. So I'm going to kick off with probably the biggest question, which is, what is sustainable digital media?
Okay, that is a big question. I would say, you know, look, it's difficult to untangle digital media from all media. You know, we think about everything because, as you know, Nestlé, you know, we advertise across pretty much all channels. But I think for digital media specifically, I think a lot of it comes back to what you just said in your introduction, Nikki. You know, I think, you know, people are really getting on top of this very, very quickly. But I think if you'd asked a lot of people in the industry just a few months ago, does digital media, you know, generate CO2? Most of them would have looked at you like you were mad because no one would have even considered it or thought about it. And it's only, you know, as we attend conferences, we read about it, we have discussions like this, that the message is getting out that, you know, something that you think, well, that's okay, that's sort of carbon neutral, carbon net zero, actually isn't. So, you know, it's really what you said, you know, around, you know, when we run online media and it takes electricity, and every time you're using electricity, unless it's 100%, you know, sustainable and renewable, you're generating CO2. So what is sustainable digital media? I think, for me, it's going on a path which helps us to get our emissions as low as possible. And, you know, we're starting to look at things like file sizes, you know, more efficient planning, et cetera, et cetera. I think the challenge that we've got, not just on digital, but on all media, is at the moment, just the very fact of us running advertising, the vast majority of it is going to generate CO2 somewhere along the chain. And, you know, short of stopping advertising, which clearly we're all in the business and, you know, we don't want to do that. You know, it's about minimizing it and eventually getting to a point where it's zero. And, you know, for me, the really important thing is not saying, well, it's a challenge or it's difficult or, you know, it's not achievable at the moment. That's not the point. The point for me is starting on that path, starting to put actions in place that can minimize our emissions, and gradually we'll get better and better at it until we get to a point where we've got fully sustainable digital media campaigns. And, you know, we can take our learning from governments and from COP26 that's just happened. You know, they're not saying we're going to flick a switch and everything's going to be carbon net zero, you know, next year. There's a path and everyone's on a path. You know, and some people might argue that 2050 is too late. You know, that's a completely different conversation. But the point is, everyone needs to start on that path. And I think it's exactly the same for, you know, sustainable digital media. Sorry, it's a really long answer.
No, absolutely. It's. I would agree with you. It's just taking that first step rather than procrastinating and sort of trying to solve everything in one go. And I can tell how passionate you are about the topic. And so I wanted to ask you, you know, what was your first step on this path? Why is this topic so important to you personally?
Yeah, do you know what? I had a kind of a light bulb moment, and it was just a discussion that I was having with someone probably a couple of years ago. And I could see all the great work that my colleagues were doing within Nestlé around sustainability. So looking at, you know, packaging, getting rid of single-use plastics, sustainable sourcing of our raw ingredients, et cetera, recycling. And I just thought, you know what? I think there's a role that media and marcoms can play here. And, you know, from a personal point of view, I've got two daughters, you know, we're handing the planet onto that generation, and it would be quite nice if we left it in as good, if not better, place than we left it. And then I started thinking about, you know, I've been in the business quite a long time, and at one point I had an international role, and I was traveling, I was flying almost every week. I'd be on a plane somewhere, and I've sort of christened myself the one-man doomsday machine because of the amount of emissions I must have emitted over the course of my career and never offset a single one of them. So it was all these things coming together, and I just thought, and then once I started diving into it, I thought, well, media really can play a part. So you know, this would be a really important and interesting area to dive into. And, you know, as you know, that's what I've been spending quite a lot of time on, probably a disproportionate amount of time over the last couple of years. You're really trying to help Nestlé, you know, start on this journey so that media can play its part with all the other elements within the marketing value chain.
No, I think it's fantastic because, as you say, many big organisations like Nestlé have really been thinking about their entire supply chain and making sure that they've got best practice at every part of their business. And media is, you know, a huge part of that supply chain. So it's good to see that you thought about how that part of the business can play an integral role in delivering against those goals. I guess I've also heard you talking about not just media being a sustainable way of working, but also being a force for good. And I wondered if you could tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, of course. Again, once I started diving into it, and when I say I, you know, it's a team, and, you know, a big part of this is partnerships, and maybe we'll come on and talk about partnerships. But when I started diving into it, I realized there was two areas here. One is pure sustainability. So how can we make all of our media activity as sustainable as possible? So that's one aspect. And, you know, we could come back and talk about the things that we've been doing around that. But I realized really quickly that big companies such as Nestlé also have a lot of influence, and we can use our influence as a force for good. So to challenge other businesses, encourage other businesses, encourage change. They're two slightly different but overlapping things. So, you know, for me, force for good would be aligning ourselves, for example, with online platforms that are doing good in the world. And, you know, I always give two examples of two companies who we work with, Goodloop and We Are 8, who've both got models where essentially we run our advertising in a brand safe environment, and a proportion of money goes to a charity. I think, well, this is a real force for good. There's the negative side of force for good, which is eliminating bad actors and, you know, not wanting to advertise within them and support them and, you know, give them funds. So, you know, we've always had approved lists for online and block lists. And it's making sure that within that block list, it's as broad as sensibly possible to exclude what, you know, what we would consider to be bad actors and making sure that we're not associated with them. So another example of force for good, there's a great example from one of my colleagues in Serial Partners, one of our businesses, who did a great on-pack promotion with an organization called the Bees Trust. And it was a very simple mechanic. You got you could apply to send off for a packet of sunflower seeds or wildflower seeds and plant them, and it was food for bees. And you know, again, some money went to the charity. So, you know, this is using our media marketing budgets to achieve something good in the world. The best example I've got of where the two have overlapped, sustainability and a force for good, is it's not online actually, but it was in out of home, where we work with our out of home specialist Posterscope to run our six sheets using 100% recycled paper and vegetable-based inks. And we ran the first campaign, so it happened to be for Quality Street, back in the spring. Now, all of our campaigns use recycled paper. And what astonished me was we were the first advertiser to do that. It had never been done in the business before. You know, being first is nice. Everyone wants to be first. But that's not the important point. The important point is, more and more advertisers are now doing that. So I think, you know, by having some conversations and going down that sustainability route, we've also been a force for good, because we've, you know, I don't want it to sound too grandiose, but helped the whole industry in a way with their out-of-home advertising, make it just that little bit more sustainable.
I remember that example. It was fantastic. I think some of the ideas that you've referenced there, they're great examples of where people have taken quite a simple idea and been able to scale it up and really make a fantastic impact. I'm just interested to hear about how you're able to empower people in your team to come up with those ideas and really get them realized in the real world. How do you go about that? How do you encourage people to lean in?
Oh, it's a pretty good question. And do you know what? It's actually a really easy question for me to answer. We're so lucky that you could have a business full of the most passionate people, but if your senior leadership aren't behind it, it's just going to be a total uphill struggle and people will just give up. And we're really, really fortunate we're in the opposite position, that our senior leadership from headquarters in Switzerland down to our UK leadership, leadership within our zone, our region, are 100% behind Nestle becoming carbon net zero, and more than carbon net zero, so getting into regenerative farming. So we can actually, you know, improve things rather than just sort of leave them in a good place. So this is critical. You need complete buy-in and leadership from the top. And I always say to people, you know, I run an internal training program, and I say to people when they attend the program, our leaders, they don't just want us to be doing this, they expect us to be doing this. And this is the big thing. So when your leaders expect you to do it, and you're aligned, and believe me, everyone within Nestle in the UK, and I'm sure in other markets as well, is really behind this. You know, we've got a lot of really smart, passionate people who really want to make a difference. So I would almost flip your question on the head and say it's not about how do I encourage them to do it. It's almost like, how do I hold them back? You know, we've got it so embedded now within the team. And also, you know, coming back to the message of partnership again, our main media agency, Zenith Publicis, are so aligned with us on this that, again, that makes it really easy. So, you know, just one example, as of next year, all of the plans that they send to us for all of our different businesses will be run through Carbon Calculator. At the moment, they're using it, the industry one that's been prepared by the Advertising Association. They've built their own one called ALICE. Don't ask me what the acronym stands for, but it's called ALICE. And I think it goes a little bit further and a little bit more detail than the industry one. But this will be great because this will put us in an amazing position. So the journey has to start with measurement. It's all very well saying, I've got these ideals and I want to be net zero and I want to be sustainable and I want to be a force for good. But you've got to measure that. And, we shouldn't lose sight that at the end of the day, we're not a charity. We're a commercial organization. We have to make a profit. I think something like 200,000 people work for Nestle around the world, something like that. They expect their salaries every month. So, the business has to be profitable. And sometimes these things come with a little bit of a cost. But if you can measure your starting point and then measure your steps along the journey, and from a media perspective, having a carbon calculator will really enable us to do that. And it doesn't mean that and includes digital media, online, offline, everything. It doesn't mean that we're suddenly going to go from emitting CO2 equivalent to being net zero in one step, because we're not. Because as I said at the beginning, the very act of us running advertising generates CO2 emissions. But what it will do is it will give us choices. So we'll be able to say, well, is there a way that we can fine-tune the plan a little bit to reduce the emissions that are coming out of it? Is there, do we need all these channels? Can we, reduce a channel, for example? So you get to a point where you're happy, and then you can have a really simple and easy conversation around offsetting. So these are our emissions. We think about taking a balance of a really effective campaign, reaching the right people, the right place, etc., and balancing that up with trying to be efficient and sustainable. There's going to be some emissions. How can we offset them? And, offsetting should be last, not first, in that chain of decision making. So, coming back to your question, by putting these kind of tools, processes, approaches in place, it does actually make it easy for people in my team and for people in within the wider business, in the marketing teams, to be able to do this. And this is very much what our global leadership have done. They've given us a fabulous set of tools and permission to go and play with them. And that's what people are doing.
I think it's really interesting what you said about, the measurement piece, making sure that you're absolutely clear on what the impact of your campaigns is going to be before they go into life. And also, as you mentioned, Nestle is still a business, they still need to turn a profit. So when you're measuring the impact of these campaigns and you're making these decisions, how are you able to balance the two? Just how expensive is it to offset the emissions on a plan, for example, and still be able to operate at that high level profitable business side?
Offsetting, I was quite surprised. Again, when I started sort of investigating and diving into it, I just had this image in my mind that it was a really expensive thing to undertake. But actually, it's not. And the measurement is the hard bit. The offsetting is the really easy bit. So to give you an example, we did a test on a historical Kit Kat campaign. So the campaign had already run, but the carbon calculator tool didn't exist at the time. But we took that particular campaign. It was a mixed media schedule. So there was TV, online video, online display. I think there was some out of home in there. So it was a typical, branding media campaign. And the media spend was, in the region of 1.6 million. And the cost to offset the emissions on that was 0.0003% of the activity. It was like a few hundred quid, compared to 1.6 million. And, anyone can find a few hundred quid to offset a campaign. All right, you're running a lot of campaigns, so, you're getting into thousands. But, the way I would frame it is to say you're running on TV. It's the cost of a daytime spot on TV. One less daytime spot on a campaign is not going to have any effect. But you can use that money, if you really haven't got it within your budget, to offset, which brings me to another really interesting point, which is you have to plan for all of this. You know, it's not something that you can shoehorn in at the last minute. So plan to measure, plan to take actions, plan to do partnerships, whatever it is, you know, build it in from day one rather than suddenly, you know, having a thought, oh, I think we need to be a bit sustainable here after the plans have done, you know, close to when the meeting is going to be booked. That's not really a recipe for success. I think that answers the question, I think. I hope.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think for many of the listeners, they'll be wondering, you know, feeling inspired by what you said, what are the steps that they can take to create a sustainable digital media strategy where they're working now? And you mentioned some of the partners that you've worked with at Nestle. Yeah. So as you say, Zenith and then Goodloop, who can maybe help on that journey. But what would your advice be, again, on where to start? Your journey, did it begin with one brand? Did it begin with one market? Where did that first step take place?
Yeah, it began for us. Obviously, you know, other companies are going to be different. It began for us in the UK. You know, I know sort of colleagues in other markets have started working along similar lines. But for us, you know, it was something that we got into maybe a little bit in advance of other markets. And as I said before, for us, it was very much about, I think you've got to, you know, my advice would be have an open mind and be prepared to have lots of conversations with people. And partnerships are the way forward. You know, no one can achieve all of this on their own. There's some things you can do on your own, but there's an awful lot that you can do in partnership with other companies. And I find that when you start having this conversation around sustainability and around a force for good, people just want to have that conversation. Once you start having it, then interesting things happen. And, you know, things build. And it might be in year one, you do like a little initiative and then, you know, you review it and say, well, you know, maybe we can push it a bit in year two and do something a bit bigger or a bit bolder. And we're all learning. You know, anyone who comes into this and says, I know it all, honestly, trust me, I just don't think anyone knows it all, because, you know, it's such a new area. I mean, sustainability isn't, but media sustainability, I think, is. And we're all learning as we go along, and we're learning from each other. You know, I read books, I read articles, I click on any link I can find in an interesting article on MediaTel or Campaign. I attend conferences, I speak to people. And, you know, I'm lucky. I've built up a body of knowledge. You know, do I know it all? Absolutely not. I never will. And no one ever will. You know, there's always a new opportunity. People approach me. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? There's a lot of really smart people out there who are turning their minds to sustainability and being a force for good and offering, you know, Goodloop. We're in really early. We're in early, and there's other people are looking at it from different angles, you know, search engines that are a force for good, social media platforms that are a force for good. It's just like, you know, getting your head around it is almost a full-time job. But that's my advice, you know, just be open, talk to lots of people. You know, if your budget stretches to it, then, you know, give it to someone as a job. Believe me, I could have done it. I haven't, but I could have done it full-time. Within Nestle, obviously, I've got other responsibilities as well. But, you know, for a big organization, you could easily turn it into a full-time job for someone to make this happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, as we're going into next year, the conversation is only going to build, isn't it, around the need for sustainability in every area of our lives. And I suppose that's another question that I wanted to ask you. Aside from doing the right thing, why should businesses be leading into these initiatives now? What will the impact be for them longer term?
There's lots of reasons. Our customers expect it. And by our customers, for us, I'm talking about supermarkets. Our consumers expect it. You know, I've seen some slightly conflicting evidence, but I honestly believe that more and more consumers are going to be expecting businesses to be doing the right thing. And I mean that in a very broad sense, you know, whatever the right thing is. our investors expect it. You know, the financial community are not stupid, and they see climate change as a huge risk. It's an absolute huge risk. And the insurance industry in particular, you know, are absolutely petrified about climate change because you know, their model is based on being able to accurately predict outcomes and therefore putting a price on it when they're offering insurance. But, you know, if you can't accurately predict outcomes because the weather is so unreliable, unexpected, it puts their whole business model under stress. So, and, you know, investors, big investors, you know, are expecting it of organizations. So, you know, we put our carbon net zero plan. We've got, you know, a really detailed, measurable plan globally. We put it to a vote at our annual general meeting in the spring, and 97% of Nestlé investors approved the plan, which is astonishing. I mean, it's, you know, it's virtually 100% who are behind it. Now, you know, it comes with costs. There are certain costs, but everyone expects us to be doing it. So, you know, you've got the obvious argument about the planet, of course. You know, I don't need to restate that. But it's, you know, I would say it's good for business. And I think business, and it could be a little bit painful to start with, but in the medium and long run, it is going to be good for business. And I think, you know, our consumers, all consumers, are going to be expecting businesses to act, to be socially responsible more than they ever have been in the past. And they're going to start slowly. It won't happen overnight. I believe they will walk away from businesses who aren't actively involved. So, you know, there's planet reasons for doing it. There's financial reasons for doing it. There's commercial reasons for doing it. There's all sorts of reasons why we should be doing it. And honestly, you know, the governments of the world have made various commitments at COP26, but really they're not the ones who are going to deliver it. I think it's businesses, big and small, who really are going to deliver it. And I think, you know, consumers don't interact with government. They interact with businesses. They interact with supermarkets and online shopping and so on. And, you know, so for them, that is the public face, if you like, of sustainability. And I think more and more people will be, particularly, you know, again, I look at my daughters and their generation. They're, you know, so committed to this. You know, they're so aware of you know, what Greta Thunberg is saying and so on. And, you know, to the extent that, and I'm not sort of singling out my daughters, but the generation as a whole, one really, really important thing for them when they're looking for jobs is to work for a company that's got a social purpose and a commitment to sustainability. So it's also another good reason for doing it is because it's good for attracting talent and for staff retention. So there's, you know, there's another reason there. There's no negatives here. Yes, there can be a bit of a cost, but most businesses can manage costs. And in the long run, you know, the cost of not doing it is going to be far, far bigger.
This is it. It's like future-proofing your business on every level, isn't it?
That's a succinct way of putting it up as opposed to my five-minute ramble. Yeah, exactly.
No, absolutely. And I think as the conversation grows and more companies are going to want to be moving into this space and following example from the work that the likes of Nestlé have done, how can we ensure that there's real accountability and transparency when it comes to driving sustainability to make sure that our industry doesn't fall foul of greenwashing, I suppose, or...
Yeah.
You know, that we're all measuring the same output and moving towards the same goals.
Yeah, that's another good question. I mean, and you know, you've mentioned greenwashing, and again, this is something I emphasize internally. You know, by all means, do good things and talk about them, like we did on the Quality Street posters. We actually had a message saying this is made from recycled paper. But the minute you get caught out greenwashing and pretending that you're doing something when you're not, that's when you get the most amazing backlash and you've gone one step forward and two steps back. So greenwash is absolutely to be avoided. So, you know, there's lots of different ways to answer your question. You know, at the highest level, you know, companies can sign up to become B Corps, you know, which is, I think, probably the highest standard that you can be held to in terms of sustainability. But it's an expensive process and it's a long process and it's not for everyone. But as part of that, you need to report on what you're doing and have it measured. But, you know, the advertising with their advertising association, sorry, with their initiatives on Ad Net Zero and Ad Green, again, you need to report. And if you can report, you know, you can see change that's going to be happening within the industry. We need to report to certain bodies. We need to report to our shareholders now that we, you know, we've gone public with our scheme. So, I would say it almost comes back to your previous question. Companies and organizations should be proud of reporting the progress that they're making. So in the same way that by law we're obliged to report on a sort of gender balance and gender pay and so on, and we publish that and we're proud to publish it, and it acts as a spur to improve things when necessary, we should be proud of publishing what we're doing. And when I say we, I mean everyone in the industry, not Nestle specifically, because, you know, we should be doing good things and therefore be, you know, pleased to share what we're doing. Everyone accepts that it's a journey, that it's not going to change overnight. So there's nothing to be ashamed of. And I think the more that people publish what they've been doing and get it measured and verified by, you know, there's lots of independent organizations, the more that it will inspire other companies to do the same, and it will inspire companies themselves to do better, to achieve better. So, you know, there isn't one single answer to that question, but there's lots of different things that people can be doing. And companies are, you know, you've only got to look at our annual report, Unilever's annual report, probably a lot of others that I haven't read. You know, sustainability is front and center of our annual report. And, you know, would it have been 10 years ago? Probably not, almost certainly not. But, it's in there. It's just so high profile. And, you know, we will report on all of our numbers and they'll be verifiable.
And to that point, I believe that you have the action plan that you referenced earlier available on your website for people to look at and take inspiration from. Is that right?
Yeah, everything that we've done is public. So you can go onto the Nestle website. You can see our carbon net zero plan. You can see our something that we call generation regeneration. It's about how we work with partners along the value chain to move even beyond sustainability. So, you know, to actually not just leave things as they are, but to make things better. And it's all along the value chain. It's not just about farming and agriculture. It could be around transport, recycling and so on. So, I could share a link with you that you could share, but it's all available on the Nestle website for if people are interested to have a look. And their annual report as well, obviously, is on the website. So it's all public knowledge. It's all publicly available. And you have to shine light on these things. I think anyone who wants to keep it secret has probably got something to hide, which we absolutely haven't.
No, absolutely. And I think certainly the point that I take from all you've said is that don't wait to start looking into these areas and to test things, you know, just take the opportunity to come up with a good idea and run with it. Yeah. And then kind of share the results. And from there, others will want to join in on those initiatives, and that sort of good work will spread not only across the organization, but also across the industry as a whole.
I think that's right. You know, I mean, I've been in conversations where, you know, businesses that, you know, usually are deadly commercial rivals are coming together to discuss this because it's a neutral topic in a way. It's such an important topic, but it's also, you know, you're not giving away commercial secrets. And, you know, the evidence for us is, you know, we've got a coffee pods business. So we've got Nespresso or we've got Nescafe Dolce Gusto. One of them's aluminium pods, one of them's plastic pods. How do you make recycling easier? Well, it would be, you know, a good thing to set up our own recycling scheme, but it would actually be a better thing, which is what we've done, to work with competitors to set up an industry recycling scheme. So if you've got a Tassimo machine, which isn't one of ours, you can use exactly the same scheme. And this is brilliant because it's, you know, you've got two highly competitive companies coming together to do something that's good for the planet, and it just makes it really, really easy for consumers. They, you know, they don't have to think about what do I do with my pods? How can I recycle them? There's just one scheme, and it's the same scheme for everyone, And I said, you know, I think we're going to be seeing more and more of these cross-industry initiatives in various areas because making it easier for consumers, because then you start really achieving traction when you make it easy for people and they don't even almost need to think about recycling because we've made it easy for them.
Yeah, it's exactly that, isn't it? It's making it easier for people to come on that journey with you, and that's where you're going to have the real impact.
Yeah.
No, that's a fantastic example. So I think we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to ask you one final question, Steve. Given the headlines around COP26 in the past couple of weeks, what would you say are the reasons that we can be cheerful in terms of the output from there?
I think I'm talking in my personal Steve capacity now rather than as a Nestle spokesperson. I think the outcome was probably a bit better than people were expecting. It wasn't perfect, but I don't think it ever was going to be perfect. I think, you know, the proof of the pudding will be when countries get back together next year and really sort of dive into the detail of what they're meant to be committing. I think, you know, it's sort of what we've been talking about. You know, we're on a path. Should we be further along that path? A lot of people will say, yes, we should. Other people would argue, you know, it's a really difficult one. You know, how quickly do you move to a net zero economy? You have to put infrastructures in place. You know, where I live, I would love an electric car, a fully electric car, but I don't have a driveway, so I have to park in the street. Well, I can't guarantee that I can always park outside my house. And even if I did, I'd have to trail, you know, a cable. So what about public charging? There's two chargers in the center of town. Well, that is not really sufficient for, you know, a town of, I don't know how many people live here, 50,000? I don't know. So, you know, you can't suddenly say no more petrol cars until you've got the infrastructure in place to make it easy for people to drive fully electric. I would love nothing more to have a fully electric car, but it's just not practical. You know, we've got them at our workplace, but, you know, COVID, et cetera, I'm not driving in every day. So COP, I would say mildly positive in my personal view, sort of 6.5 or 7 out of 10. But, you know, that's no reason for us to take our foot off the gas. In fact, it's every reason for us to work even harder than ever, because it's businesses like mine, like yours, like, you know, all the other businesses that are going to make the difference at the end of the day.
I couldn't agree more. I think the power is definitely with the businesses. And as you say, you know, working with the consumer to help them make those choices easier. But it's been a pleasure to speak to you. I hope that the listeners have found it as inspiring as I have. We'll put the links from the Nestle roadmap up on our site as well, so that people can access that and take more inspiration from the work that's being done there. But for now, thanks ever so much, Steve.
Oh, thanks, Nikki. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Unpicking Digital Advertising with Unruly. Don't forget to subscribe to get all the latest updates. And look out for our next episode coming soon. Find us at unruly.co.